Good evening to you all. It's a little hot. A little hot. Got it. I'm not used to this thing. As many times as I've set this up for somebody when I'm working the sound booth, I've actually never worn it. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about our trip to Chimala that myself and Andrew went on. I am going to give you more of a physical aspect of the mission, a rundown of the departments, and then Andrew will put a bow on it with talking about the church there and the school of preaching and wrap things up for us tonight. So where in the world, well, let me just say this. I want to thank Andrew for helping me on this trip. I had never gone as far away as Africa, and he did everything for me, from buying the tickets to helping me with my visas to getting shots. So he did a really great job, and I think you should be proud that he's working for us here as a in-house missionary, so to speak, that can go on these trips and do the things that we can't always go and do, and he's able to do that. Also, I'd like to thank some more people. You know, about 13 or 14 months ago, when I was asked to help with this work, I knew that I would need a lot of help. And so I began to organize things. I knew I'd have to have a warehouse. And Brother John Cackleman II has really been good to help me with that. He manages that for me because I just don't have time to do it. He's over there a lot and keeps everything neat and organized. John III helped me in the beginning with legal aspects of transferring all the things we needed to do from New York Avenue congregation. And then Carol Baker helped me with setting up bank accounts for the mission work. And then I knew Patsy would not be able to do all the secretarial work that would be required for a work this large. So I asked Jill Bingham to help me with that. And she has done an outstanding, outstanding job. The first year was not that easy. Had a lot of things, as you can imagine, in transition that would go wrong, and they did. And we have been able to work through that and could not have done this work without her. You need to give her a hug sometime. So where in the world did we go? We went to Chimala. It's in Tanzania, and that's this country here. It's on the east side of Africa. It is where you hear of Mount Kilimanjaro is located in Tanzania. Many of the safaris that people go on, they go to Tanzania to see those things. Andrew and I did not go on a safari when we were there, I promise you. We were working the whole time. So this is a blow up of the country itself. We flew into Dar es Salaam there, and we flew another plane over here to Mbeya. And then there was about a 40 or 50 mile car ride over to Chimala. And you can see that it is kind of out on its own. It took about 2 hours to go those 50 miles on this one road through the country. This is a terrible picture, and I'm sorry. I took this off of Google Maps. If you've got your phone, you can Google right now, Chimala, Tanzania. Put it on the satellite view, and this is what you'll see. You'll be able to blow it up a lot better. I wanted to put out some things, and I guess what I'm trying to do with this picture is show you just how large this work is. I don't think there's a work in the brotherhood that is large as this mission is. This is here as part of the mission. This is the hospital. This is the primary school. This is secondary school and dorms. The land on the bottom of the mountain itself is about 400 acres. So it's very large. But you see, there's houses through here. These are missionary homes. These are people that actually live on the mission. As I said, this is the secondary school. Let's see. This is the hospital. You'll notice the shape of it is a square. That seems to be a type of architecture there. I'm not sure. You see the square there. That's the primary school. This work is just so large that it's really hard to get a grasp on all that goes on here in one day. And I hope to be able to show you some of those things. I want you to look at this one little building. This is brand new. I'll talk about it in a minute. It goes with the farm program, and I think it's going to be a very important little building for us. So what was our purpose? Our purpose was to see the mission firsthand. I'd never been there. I've been working with it over a year and had never seen this mission. We were also to meet with mission leaders of each department, which we did. We had a meeting with most of them by themselves, and then we also had a department head meeting that they have once a month. We were there for that. And then we also wanted to bring Dalrada's vision for this mission. When we took this over, the elders asked, okay, what are we going to do with it? What's the end game? Where are we going with this? We don't want to just take it over and not have any goals. And what we wanted to do is we felt like the gospel is being taught there, but we want to reemphasize that and make sure every department knows that they're working toward those goals of teaching the gospel to everyone that comes in contact with our mission, especially the hospital. And secondly, we want to move this mission toward a self-supporting mission. Right now, we flow quite a bit of funds to this mission every month that people from all over this country send to Dalrada. Jill handles all that, and then we do a monthly draw that is set up by the stateside coordinator. You remember Howell Ferguson, and he's doing a really good job as well. But so every month he sends a request for a draw, and we send that over there. We want to try one day soon, maybe later than sooner, but we want to diminish the amount of American funds that are going over there. We want these people to be able to self-support this mission, and I'll show you our plans to do that. So this is called the Great North Road. It ought to be called the Only Road, because it is the only road. That's how you get to Jamala, and that's the best asphalt you'll see there. Like I said, it took us about 2 hours, and Andrew and I had the pleasure of going that trip twice because my luggage didn't make it. So on Tuesday or Wednesday, we had to go back to Embaya to the airport and come back through this road. So we got quite familiar with this road. Every piece of large equipment, 18-wheelers, anything you can think of that goes down the road, all the way down to a little bicycle, travels this road. And people have no fear. It is something like I've never seen before. So this is a picture of the mission. You are looking from the primary school out to the mountains. It's a very mountainous region. It is about 3,900 feet at the base of the mountain here. And when we show you the pictures on the mountain, it's about 6,000 feet. So it's very good climate. They have a rainy season and a dry season. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just wanted you to get some views of how beautiful the mission is. This is the rainy season while we were there, and it did rain every day, but it's a beautiful, beautiful mission. Again, 400 acres on the bottom here. And here it is raining. It rained every day just like this, and here's what you do when it rains. You find some place to stop, and you get under something, and you wait it out. We were actually coming back from church on Sunday there and just got caught in a downpour, and we had to stop and wait and look around, wait for the rain to stop. Now, this I just want to throw in and show you. This is the first time I ever slept under a mosquito net. And you'll notice that that net's a little bit tattered right there. And that's because the first night I was sleeping under that net, I got up in the middle of the night half asleep. And I had to tackle that bear to get out of that bed. I forgot all about that thing. It about killed me. So if you ever go there, be wary of the mosquito nets. So this is the crew that was there with us. These two men are from Arkansas, Prescott, Arkansas. This is the minister there. And the other man is a retired teacher. They came to work with the mission. They stayed a little bit longer than us. I think the younger man there may have aspirations for doing mission work in the future. And so they are supporters of the mission, and they wanted to come and see what it was all about. He is also an electrician. John Ratliff there, he helped some with, they were doing some wiring on the little building I talked about earlier that's for the farm program. Of course, you know Howell and Mary Ferguson, the stateside coordinators, they've been with us several times. And this back here is the Coldwater family. You remember they came and spoke to us about the farm program, and they were there. I think they were going to stay about 6 weeks. Everybody ended up coming home early because of the coronavirus threat, and there was country of Tanzania has been put on the terrorist watch list, so they were really, our country was watching who was coming in from that country, so they went ahead and left early. So there are no Americans on the mission currently. We did not eat as you would think. we had a lady that cooked for us every day, and she was like the best cook you'll ever find. If you'll notice this picture, do you see one guy that has something in his hand? That's my friend Andrew, and he loved that bread she cooked, homemade. And we were about to leave that day, and he got him one last bite. So anyway, but we did eat well. We enjoyed eating. We ate every meal with the Fergusons, and they were very good hosts for us. So the primary school is one of the departments I talked about. You notice there it has 451 students and 37 employees. So it's quite large. Here is the inside. It's not a very good picture, but the inside of that square I showed you on the Chamala map. And here is a picture of all the students lined up. Every morning they have a devotional at 7:30. Every department has a devotional. And we bounced around every morning to a different devotional. But you can see all the children there, and I wish I could play the video. I've got one of them singing. It is quite beautiful to hear them sing in Swahili. But this is the teachers had a devotional before the children did it, and we were able to sit in on that and enjoy some time with the teachers. These are the students, beautiful children. And you'll notice this if you go to either one of the schools, the high school or the primary school, they have painted Bible verses and things like this on the walls. I have some more pictures in just a minute of that, but these are actually the art students at the school that are doing these things. Here is three little girls. We saw them. They were out at playtime. You notice they keep their head really close shaven. But those are all little girls there. And here's their little playground they were playing. I did want you to see the kitchen that feeds all these children. There you see he's making bread. And these are the large vats where they cook rice and beans every day for them. So they're quite large. A lot of children to feed. We have two dorms there. There are children that live on the mission during school time. So this is the lunchroom. You see it's quite large. It's got a stage there. And also you can see in the background, you see some of the pictures I told you about where they have painted on the walls, Bible verses and things of that nature. Second is the secondary school or the high school, maybe you would call it, is 121 students with 23 employees. And here is another little courtyard that they have. Again, it's a little bit smaller just because of the number of students that go there. Several buildings. There you see, this is the girls' dorm, and this is the boys' dormitory. And then this is their morning devotional that we went to. And you see there, John Ratliff, excuse me, is speaking to those children there. But these are high school students, and that's what they look like there. So here they are again. The guy on the right there is MSD's from Arkansas, and he is an ex-teacher, and so they let him teach quite a bit in the schools. They do learn Bible every day as one of their core classes. And I have more pictures of those scriptures and things that they, and again, these are painted by the students. You remember, I'm not sure if you remember, but Carol and Richard Rogers were missionaries there, and Carol was big on helping these students paint these things. She worked at the school a lot while they were there. And just another beautiful picture. So next we have the hospital. And I know you remember when Hal was here, he talked about the hospital started in 1962, and it looked like that. You may remember that building. But that has really changed since 1962. We have 128 employees. We have three full-time doctors there. And this is what the hospital looks like today. Just to give you an example of what happens at this hospital, there are 300 babies born a month there. And you say, well, that's 3,600 a year. What does that equate to, right? So I looked up the Alabama Department of Health keeps records in Alabama on hospitals and children that are born. There are only three hospitals in this state that birth more children a month than this hospital. That's two in Birmingham and one in Huntsville. And none of them in Montgomery have more children born a month than this hospital here. So this is a very active place. I won't tell you that all those babies live, because they don't. Because a lot of times the mothers show up from out in the bush and they're about to have their child, and sometimes they just don't make it. But 300 babies a month. This is quite a big operation here. And here we are. I know you remember I showed you the picture from the satellite view. This was the square. We are in the center of that square. That is a waiting room, so to speak, in the hospital. It is outdoors there. But the hallways are inside the square. You can see, so it's covered all the way around, and it's got that courtyard in the middle. Here's another picture of that hall, of one of the hallways that goes around the outside of that place where we were standing. There is another shot you can see. It's quite large. Again, 128 employees. This is one of the examination rooms for, I think, the emergency room. This is a list of services and what they cost. You see x-rays there and other things. And the window next to that is the pharmacy where they can buy things, medicine. And this is the dental ward. They have dental chairs, and I think two or three of these rooms have the dental chairs in them. Here is one of the labs we went to that they actually gave us our malaria medicine, because you have to get malaria medicine in Tanzania because it is specific to the type of malaria that you get in Tanzania. You cannot get that drug here. So they set us up with a care package to take home with us in case we found out we had it when we got home. Here's just one example of the many rooms that have beds in them. I try not to take pictures of people that were sick, so we got some that were empty and tried to take those pictures. Just another picture to see they all have the mosquito nets. This is a hallway to the children's ward, and here is a terrible picture of the children's ward. I just stuck my head in and took a picture of that, but you see all the baby beds in the back. So quite a busy hospital. This is the water treatment plant for the hospital. The water for the hospital is from a well, and this is where they chlorinate it. They have one man that stays with this all the time. I think two men, and they take 12-hour shifts. So these guys make sure the water is clean for the hospital. This is being built by the Tanzanian government. It will be a HIV wing. It is costing us nothing, but there is no telling when that will be finished. I saw nobody working on that while we were there. So they get to a point, they run out of money, and they just leave it for a while. But it is going to be for HIV, and it is being built by the Tanzanian government. The next department we'll call the estate. This is the people that take care of the grounds around the mission. This is the security guards that man the gate at night, that patrol the grounds. The day workers work here, and they also work with the farm. But it takes about 40 people to keep this thing running. This is a main building where they keep all the equipment. It has a big brick wall that's probably, I would say, 150, 200 feet down one side and the other. It's a big square, and they close this gate at night where they keep the equipment, keep everything safe. That is the director of the estate department, his office. And this is where we had our devotional that morning with the estate workers. One of the members of the estate staff was actually baptized today. We're there, and Andrea will tell you more about that. But this is the hardware store in the estate. They have, you know, mechanic shop, all things that they need to keep things running. This is one of the Italian tractors. I'd never seen one of those with tracks, so I took a picture of it. But here they were working on one of the other tractors. Howell actually brought a water pump from the States with him in his suitcase to fix this tractor because it was too expensive to buy one in Shimala. So, again, this is the generator. The Tanzanian government operates the electrical company, and it is not that reliable. So many times at night it goes out, and the mission has, I think that's about a 16,000-watt generator that runs the hospital and things and the lights and homes and things where we were. It's just a backup. They run it I think it was run maybe two or three times while we were there, but it goes off as soon as the sun comes up. So a lot of mornings you wake up and there's just no power. This is a house we stayed in. There are several houses like this on the mission for missionaries. This one is called the guest house. It's where nursing students go. It holds about 20 people. It's got, I believe, four bathrooms, but we stayed there with John and Tim Estes there when we were there. And here's just another picture of a house. Still another. I think there's six or seven mission homes like this on the mission that various missionaries live in as they come. This is the house that Howell and Mary stay in when they go. This is the motor pool, I guess you would say. Several of the diesel Toyota Land Rovers that they drive. And next is the farm. I believe this is the key to our success. We are pushing them to teach the training school students to learn how to farm as a way to make money when they leave the mission. And also, we want to turn this mission over to them for them to have a way to make money to sustain themselves. And the way we're going to do that is we've got all this land, and the potential is there for us to use that as a farm and make money doing so. And so that's the plan. We have about 20 employees. Many of them are day workers. This is the farm department head's little office. The only reason I'm showing this is it is one of the last remaining buildings that was built by the Germans. This little, you see the different style home, but it is very old, and I just thought it was a neat type house. But here's some of the crops they're growing. That's corn. And there's another close-up. And here's pigs. We tried goats, ducks, rabbits, and pigs. Rabbits didn't work. Goats, not so well. But, boy, we're good at raising pigs. We started with 7 pigs, and we got over 100 now. And they're going to start selling those, and, of course, using them on the mission for food. But they have these portable electric fence, and they can take these pigs out and put them in an area that's all grown up. And in 2 days, it's mowed down and ready for something else. Here's more pig pictures, and there's some baby pigs. And here's a really good goat that stays up on that rock. I thought that was neat, so I just took a picture of it. This, I know you're going to say, why is this man showing me a picture of water? This is the Chamala River that I showed you that's on that side of the mission. I can't remember what side that is. Over there. So the reason this is important is, as I told you, there is a rainy season and a dry season. And so if we did not have this canal during the dry season, we would not be able to grow crops. But this canal was designed, it is an engineering feat to me. If you see the thing up close, you'd know what I'm talking about. But I think it was developed by the Germans when they owned this land. And why I say that, it goes through the woods there, and it stays right on the edge of if you can see this, the water is coming around this way, it makes this turn, and this is a gully. They dug this into the side of a mountain, basically. You can see how it goes straight up from here, and there's that guy that likes bread. But so this somehow is on a grade that it falls toward the mission. This comes all the way through. They call walking the canal. You walk this, the canal's here, and that's about a 25-foot drop right there. So it is so important that the water comes from the Chamala River into the mission. It can go to the crops. We can water the pigs, all these things. Part of that water goes from here into this receptacle here and goes down that hill. And down that hill is this pump. Now, I know that's a bad picture, but what this pump does is uses the pressure from that water as it's coming down that hill to push water up a pipe that's going out there, and it goes to this water system. And this is way up a hill above the mission. And so we have gravity-fed water to the whole mission off of this. Now, I'll tell you, the homes that we stayed in are on well water, but the Tanzanians can drink this water and they're fine. It's good, clean water for them. And it's also, again, good for the crops. The water that does not go into this cistern goes on to the mission, and you'll see this canal flows all the way through the mission. Here's actually the bad picture of the pig pens, but it flows right there beside it. You see it's going beside the crops. So they are able to use this water year round to do what we need to do. This is probably nowhere else in Tanzania is something like this, where we'll have water even in the dry season. It's a very good opportunity. I told you about the little house that was on the far right side of the mission. This is out by the road. It was just built. This is one of the projects that Gage Coldwater told you about. And he, at the time, they were trying to raise money to get power to hook to this building when here. But this is the milling building. This is where we are going to have Tanzanians bring their own corn and rice. And for a small portion of that corn and rice, we're going to mill their corn or their rice. Two good things happen from that. We get part of their corn or rice, and then we get the hulls from that. And guess what we can do with the hulls? We can feed it to the pigs. So that's free food for the pigs. Plus, we're going to be getting corn and rice that we did not have to grow. This is a great opportunity for the mission. We'll be able to sell corn and rice to the school at a discounted rate that will help them. Again, the hospital will benefit from this. And the School of Preaching students are going to learn to farm on this as well. So this is a great opportunity from this. Here they are hooking up the electrical, and there's some of the meals inside this building. It is amazing to me that they would pour a concrete floor and then take the time to use a pickaxe to dig it out. But that's the way they ran their power. You see, there's several pictures. And then finally, I'm going to talk about Elisa Mountain or the Elsa Mountain. This is about 9 miles from the hospital. It takes 45 minutes to go those 9 miles. It is a very steep road. There's a picture of the road. There's some of your friends you might see on the road going up. And then you see these, once you get on the mountain, you see these beautiful eucalyptus trees. And this is where the mission originally started. This was started in the 50s. You may have heard of Eldred Eccles. He started this. And this is the old church building. It was abandoned in 1971. And I think it's because the government started a program in 1968 that said all Tanzanians have to move toward roads. That was a social program to try to move people closer and urbanize the country. And so this was abandoned in 71. And here's some more ruins. But this is, we have on this mount, we have about 230 acres that we can use for farming. We have about 40 or 50 acres of it in rice and beans, or corn and beans at this time. But there is one, here's a beautiful view. This is, I don't know if you can see it, but Chimala, the city or the area of Chimala is down in the bottom there. It's really beautiful up there. But this is the only house that's been restored. It was restored in 2016, and I think it is a vital part of the future of the mission, too, because people can go to this house and stay and go over the mountain and work in villages where the church has not been established yet. And that's one of the goals for pushing the gospel on the other side of the mountain. And the reason this is important, again, as I said, that road going up the mountain, it just takes so long and it's so hard. It's not something you would want to go up and down every day. That is the end of my presentation. I hope I didn't take up too much time. We'll let Andrew take care of the rest.
I got really excited because I thought there were just two of us on the trip this whole time, but I found out at the beginning of Mark's lesson that there was this third guy. I'm really excited to meet this Andrew kid who went on the trip with us. You'll see a picture over here in just a minute. Mark got to preach over in the Chimala Mission Church. First time he's ever used a translator, did a great job. Went a total of 7.5 minutes, and so really set my expectations for how long I needed to go tonight. And boy, was I wrong about that. So here, as we start thinking, before I really get into talking about the church itself, I wanted to just give you a little bit of my travel experience. This time, this is a picture that I took from our hotel room in Dar es Salaam. I don't really know how to describe to you what we experienced in this hotel. I know that last time we were there, it was warm, but it was a little different this time because we left Montgomery last time and it was warm. And we got there and it was warm, so I was kind of used to it. This time we left Montgomery and it was 30 degrees. And we landed in Dar es Salaam. It was maybe in the low 90s with a humidity of, I believe I calculated it, 43,672%. So we got to this particular hotel room. And let me explain something to you. Some of you have been here for a little while. Some of you remember Big Giff, who rolled around these corridors and ate whole party packages of Oreos in one sitting, which, don't challenge me, I can still do that. That Big Giff learned how to sweat. Because it was a daily thing for me. You stand up out of bed and you sweat. You take a shower and you sweat. It's just constant. And I thought, you know, maybe if I lose a few pounds here and there, I'd stop sweating. But it's stuck with me. You know, I still, and maybe that's just me getting older. Maybe that's just one of the features that I have now, is just the older I get, the sweatier I get, I guess. I have never experienced what I experienced in this hotel room that night. We walked in. And we looked at the beds, and Mark said, there's no blankets on these beds. We found out real quick why. You didn't need a blanket in that room. There's no air conditioner. You open the window. There's no breeze coming in. They had a towel on the bed, though, which I quickly discovered was for the every 10 minutes when I woke up to wipe myself off. That was the single hottest night I've ever spent in my life. But I woke up to this beautiful view in the morning. So worth it? Question mark? I'll let you guys decide. In fall of 2018, you may remember myself and Simba and John Kackelman Jr., we went to Chimala to lay eyes on it for the first time as the eldership here was thinking about picking up the work. And one of the things that I want to encourage you to do, you know, I know we mention it sometimes, but continue to encourage our eldership here. Continue to pray for them. Continue to be glad that we have them. Because Mark has just shown you 102 slides that give you a tiny piece of the size of how large this whole operation is. And this is just one of the 30 some odd works that our eldership oversees. So if you ever wonder what these men do, understand that just that part of this church alone, just that part of our elders' job, is a huge responsibility. Continue to encourage them and strengthen them and pray for them as they oversee not just this, but all of the other works, and then also take care of the flock here. It's a big responsibility. So when John and Simba and I went there the first time, and this is, obviously you can tell I'm not a photographer because this is the picture I took way back then. Very pretty. You know, the graininess doesn't really do justice to what this looks like. But this is from the top of the mountain the last time we went. So that's kind of what I was expecting this time. So I took a picture this time from the same spot. And it's just a vast difference between those two things. Very, very interesting to get to go at two different times of year. But particularly what I want to talk about is these final couple of areas of the operation over there, the church and the preaching school. So this is just the outside of the church. After every worship service, everybody gathers around outside and just greets each other and talks for sometimes several hours. And so we got an opportunity to meet with them. This is an interesting church because it's one of the few churches out in the mission field that has established an eldership. They have three men that are elders there. They guide the church and they take care of the people who are there. I would say that probably from the time that I went in fall of 2018 to January of 2020 this year, I'd say the church has probably grown numerically about 20 members. So they're out there and they're doing work and they are continuing to spread the message. Here's a little picture of Mark preaching here on Sunday morning. You know, it was amazing that we were able to get this picture in the amount of time that he spoke, but we did manage to grab it. And then you get this other really good picture of me. Now, I do want to talk about for just a minute. It is a grainy picture, but the gentleman who's translating for me there is one of the elders. One of the best translators in all of Africa. He may not be saying exactly what I'm saying, but he gets the gist of it, and he puts the effort and love into it that maybe I don't necessarily get to. So there were moments where I would you know, speak one particular thought or one particular sentence, and 10 minutes later, I'm still waiting for him to finish translating it. So I just trusted he's an elder, so he's going to lead these people in the right way. But he does a great job. We connected because he grows his own coffee. So that's how you know he's one of the best men in all of Africa. But here we are. This is the preaching school. We met up there for one of their chapel services. And here again, that's Boaz is his name. He's the elder who was translating for me in the last picture. He's leading their morning devotional here. They've got about 20 students. I think right now three or four in the English speaking program, and everybody else is strictly in the Swahili program. This picture is really interesting. We found this out there, and I don't know how well you can see this up here. But what we have here is every line that you see, every bit of text that you notice, is an established Church of Christ. And I'm trying to remember, I believe this circular area right in this area is the Chamala, other side, yeah, right down here, is the Chamala congregation. Everything out here is about within a 5 to 10 mile radius of the Chamala Church of Christ. They've got their hands all throughout this region, and I want to come back and revisit that in just a minute. Here's a picture of the preaching school. They've got several different buildings, a little hut in the middle. Most of these are just going to be classroom buildings, and also this is the library right over here. Easily my favorite room there. They have several books that make me jealous and wish that I owned them. And then also here, we've just got a little picture of our group waiting out the rain in the hut. One opportunity that we did have, of course, Mark mentioned that we got to meet with all the heads of the departments, but here we also got to meet with all of the teachers of the Bible school, find out exactly, you know, what they're teaching, what their plans are as they go on. As we talked with them, we reiterated and they reemphasized their desire to get into the farming program and to make this whole operation self-supporting. And they all expressed their desire to get involved as teachers and lead the students in this. Also, we discussed some of the work that they do outside of the preaching school. One of the things that we help support over there is a radio show that this man in the bright blue in the center over here that you can see, he does this radio show, and it reaches several thousand ears on a weekly basis. So that's just one of the ways that we are able to help them reach the community. Here's the inside of the library. This is the printing shop. This is where they do all of their pamphlets, all of their tracts. They definitely get some very good responses from all of these. Just another little bit of the printing shop there, and here's some of the things that they distribute on a regular basis. But of course, we're doing all of this for one reason, right? We're doing all of it for the purpose of spreading the seed and spreading the kingdom of God. While we were over there, we got to witness this particular baptism of this young man who has been working on the estate for the last few years. And they've been studying with him and talking with him about becoming a Christian. And while we were there, I believe it was Tuesday morning, he made the decision to obey the gospel. And Chamala is a big place. There's a lot of things that are going on there. There's a lot of different cogs, a lot of different wheels that are spinning. But ultimately, the goal here is the same goal as every mission work that we support. And that is to bring the gospel of Christ to people in every way that we possibly can. As I think specifically about the church that's there in Chamala, the church reminds me of Jesus talking about the mustard seed. You remember Matthew chapter 13, Jesus talks about the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and he sowed in the field. And while this is smaller than all the other seeds, when it is full grown, it is larger than the garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches. I'm going to step back just a minute here. I know you can't see this whole map. I know you can't read everything that's on it. But we got this tiny little dot right up there. That's the Chamala Church of Christ. And because of the work that they've done, because they have been an established congregation, because they have taken an opportunity to invest in their community, we now have the gospel of Christ spread all over this giant radius. Every last one of these marks is an established church. they've taken the gospel and they've applied personal responsibility to it. They said, we have a message and we need to tell other people about it. And so I wondered, as I looked at this map particularly, if we were to take a map of Montgomery and label all of the areas that the Dalreda Church of Christ had influenced, what would that look like? You know, we do a lot of great work around the world. We support a lot of great mission works around the world. And if we were to have a worldwide map of all the places that Dalreda has influenced, I'm sure there would be places all over the world, hundreds of places that we could say, yes, Dalreda's fingerprints are there. But as I look at this map of what Chamala Church of Christ has done in the Chamala community, I wonder what our map would look like in Montgomery. How are we reaching the people who are here? You know, this morning, Melvin gave us this excellent lesson about the victory in Christ, about how we overcome through Christ. And we hold on to this message, and we know this message, and here we stand tonight as people who proclaim this message. We believe in the death and burial and resurrection of Jesus Christ. We believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And we have this great message that we know about. It's a life-changing message. We can't hold on to it. We have to take the personal responsibility that we see laid out in front of us. You know, sometimes when we do these mission reports, we think about all the things that as missionaries or as the sponsoring church, we have taught the people at Chamala. You know, we've taught them about the farming program, and we've taught them about how to build up the hospital. But look at what we can learn from them. Look at how they are reaching their community. Folks, they started as a mustard seed. And now with their established congregation, they're sending out missionaries into the field to proclaim this message of victory to a dark world. You know, the world that's around us, the world that we know is a dark, scary place. I mean, you have to watch the news for 2 minutes to be scared of what's going on in the world. But the message that we have is that you don't have to be afraid. The message that we have is that just as through one man sin entered the world and death through sin, so death spread to all men, there's a free gift. That's what Paul says in Romans chapter 5. He says, if by the transgression of the one many died, much more did the grace of God and the gift by the grace of the one man, Jesus Christ, abound to the many. And so he goes on and he talks about the sacrifice of Christ, and he talks about the fact that Christ has overcome and Christ has beaten death. And then he says in response to that in chapter 6, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin so that grace may abound? Absolutely not. How shall we who have died to sin still live in it? The message that we have is not just a message of bringing numbers into the church building. It is not just a message of adding numbers to our budget. It is a message of changing people's lives from the darkness of the world to the light that is in Christ. And as we look at how Chamala has spread that message to our community, we can ask ourselves, how have we spread that message among our people in Montgomery? You see, because the things that we do here, the things that we do at the Dalreda Church of Christ with the message of God is what impacts the things that we do in the 30 mission works that we support. If we do not continue to spread the gospel here in our town, we will not be able to continue to spread the gospel throughout the world. Because it all starts here with us. It starts with our responsibility, taking on the message that we know and spreading it to the people of Montgomery. What about our personal maps? What do they look like? Think outside of the church at Dalreda and just think about me. If I was to create a map of the people in Montgomery that I have affected, what would it look like? And maybe tonight as you sit there and think about your personal map, maybe you realize there's a lot that I could learn from Chamala. there's a lot that I could learn from a church all the way on the other side of the world. And there's a lot more that I could be doing. Tonight, I encourage us all to rededicate ourselves to the responsibility of spreading the message. To see what the Chamala Church has done and how they have grown. And to challenge us as the Dalrata Church of Christ to build this kind of map in our hearts, in ourselves, in our personal lives, and in the community of Montgomery. It starts with us here, and it spreads to the world. Maybe tonight's the first time that you've heard the message. Maybe tonight's the first time you've been in an assembly like this. We have opportunities to study. We have opportunities to come to Christ. If this is the moment that you need to, by faith, repent of your sins and confess His name before the audience and give yourself to Him in the act of baptism, the opportunity is here to do that now. But also, we have a wonderful opportunity now as we look at our particular map and we look at the areas maybe that we have failed and we think about the places where we could do better. We have an opportunity to pray for each other, to encourage each other, to confess our sins, and to strengthen each other. And tonight we offer the invitation that you can come forward and we will give you that opportunity as we stand and sing.